The 6th annual Crucial Fest is a local music festival which features local and national heavy bands running June 15th to 18th in various Salt Lake venues, including all ages locations as well as 21 and older only spots. Visit crucialfest.com for more info and to purchase tickets. Make sure to follow Crucial Fest on Facebook to find links to articles and music videos highlighting this year's performers.
Salt Lake Underground.
You're listening to... I forgot. You're listening to Slug Sound Waves.
My name is Curtis Jensen. In form of Rocket, I play guitar and sometimes I sing.
My name's Peter Mikowski, and I play the guitar and vocals, and I am the sensual masseuse in form of Rocket.
My name is Ben. I play bass guitar in the band Form of Rocket, and I do occasionally do some vocals, but primarily just the bass guitar. It's my jam.
The story goes that Ben and Eric Bliss were playing music in a couple of different iterations. One was Youngblood, which involved guys from New Transit Direction. That turned into Form of Rocket when Youngblood became more serious.
We played for a few years and toured under the name The Power of Means. It was Eric Bliss and I and various drummers. We got to a point where the band just kind of got annoying to keep together. Eric and I talked about continuing music, so he moved to drums, and I had a bunch of song ideas on the bass, and so we started playing together at the Moroccan, actually, just bass and drums, and Eric put together some flyers for guitar players. I believe Curtis and Peter were the first two respondents of those flyers.
Peter and I were like kids. I think I was barely 19.
This was the first time I had actually played with band members who I looked up to. Like, I grew up watching Power of Means at the Moroccan when they would play, and that was a big deal for me to play with people as skilled as Eric and Ben, and it was really cool. I remember just the writing process being very exciting for me personally.
And I can remember, like, the first practice with T-Talk, because we had kind of built all the riffs for the songs together and then, like, arranged them together with Eric playing drums. And we had them generally, like, I don't know, 80% fleshed out. Like, they had beginnings, middles, and ends and stuff like that. And then the band went through a lineup change, and we tried to figure out who we wanted to play. And me and Peter worked at this shitty telemarketing place called Pick. T-Top was working there, and I think we were just like, what the fuck are we going to do? And T-Top was there. Like, no calls were coming. He's like, I'll fucking play in the band. Fuck. Ah. You know? And, like, so he does. We get together with him. The first practice, it was just like, as soon as we're like, well, hey, this is a song. This is the beginning. This is the middle. This is the end. And I think one of the first songs we played was You Know What This Is. And it was just like, T-Top just opened up, and it was just like, shit, this went from being in a band to, like, this is a thing. This is, like, a thing now. And it just took off from there, and it felt really good. So we took the songs and got them all polished up, and then Andy Patterson had a place, this half-abandoned, damaged warehouse. He had, like, a Pro Tools rig and a couple of mics, and he was just getting going. So we went in and got it done, and it was, like, it was really fun. It was really neat. It was like, God, I sound like my dad right now. It was really fun and neat.
That's so neat.
We recorded a demo and played some shows and then wanted to record a 7-inch, which we did with Ned Clayton, is that right? And then did some touring and actually quite a bit of touring. It was good, but there was definitely like personality conflicts. After our first big summer tour, we asked Eric to leave the band, and then we had Tyler, T-Top from Clear, Tyler Smith, join up with us. And then that four-piece, me and Peter on guitar, and then T-Top and Ben for drums and bass, respectively. That is what we recorded, Se Puede, which we're re-releasing on vinyl for these shows, and then Lumber. And then after Lumber, I got a wild hair up my ass and wanted to, like, not be in a band and go to school and travel and left. And then Eric came back and played guitar, and but then that didn't work out, and Gentry played guitar. And then they recorded tracks for Men, and I heard them. Ben brought them over very intentionally while I was working as the receptionist at Leave Home Booking. Ben brought it over, like, hey, you want to listen to these tracks for Men? And I was like, yeah, man. And I listened to it, and I was like, shit, man, I want to sing on those, man. And he's like, oh, really, you do? And he looked at me like, I knew you would. That's why I came here. And so I jumped back in and recorded vocals, and we toured a bit on Men, but then I wanted to go to Peace Corps, and so I left again when Ben...
It was the Men lineup.
Yeah.
We do what we want.
But then I was playing guitar too, and Gentry was doing stuff on baritone guitar. So we had like three guitars, and that was the last thing. And then it was like, you didn't play, and I moved to Alaska.
Then we just stopped. In 2011, Curtis was back in town, so we got everybody back together and played some more shows. We're all in town again. Curtis is getting hitched, and he's in town for his bachelor party, which is pretty awesome. And so we're like, let's play some shows. Okay, we will do that.
Tyler Coburn offered to help us repress Se Puede on vinyl. In fact, we're going to eventually do all the Form of Rocket stuff on vinyl with him. And that kind of lined up with an offer from Crucial Fest and Jerem, who's always been, those guys are the best and super supportive. And so the timing is just good. It's like I was in town. These guys had time. Eagle Twin wasn't on tour. We had talked for a while about playing Se Puede front to back with the original, like, Se Puede setup. And then from there, it was like, well, let's play shows.
I remember when we were working at Pick and we were getting the rough tracks back from Andy, and we would bring them to work and listen to them together because we were all together. At one time, we all worked at Pick. They'd even let us just grab a conference room really quick and we'd listen. I just remember coming back when we were finally getting down the full mix of the master version, and I just couldn't believe that it was coming out and sounding the way it did, and the songs were coming out and sounding the way they did. But did we do this? I did not expect that record to come out and sound the way it did and like it. This was our first real run at recording. I knew when we had that final master, I was like, wow, this is kind of special. To this day, it's the one record I can listen to front to back. I would say we had, like, maybe, for all the vocals that are done on that record, probably, would you say, 40% are actual lyrics?
Maybe that. Like, actually had words. Some of them, there was, like, sounds I remembered to make. Like, I need to sound like this. Or like that.
When we first started playing, we played without microphones. All the vocals were just kind of us just kind of flipping out live, and we wanted to capture that.
Which was, like, weird when Andy was like, okay, main tracks are done, let's do vocals. There's the vocal booth. You walk in there, and you're, like, in this, like, shower, and everybody's looking at you, and they're like, okay, go, and you go like this. You're like, It was really weird when it came time to do, like, a lyric sheet, because they were like, hey, do you want to put some lyrics in here? We're like, sure, man, whatever. So we went back and listened to what we had recorded, and I can remember sitting in my car at a break on Pick, like, listening to him be like, well, it kind of sounds like this, and writing it down.
One of my main memories is the fact that I was just overly obsessive about getting my bass tone a certain way. Actually emailing Steve Albini to ask him how he got his bass tone the way that he did on Goat. I just had to know what he did to get that tone, and I got an email back from him. He gave me as much information as he could, and I just worked really hard at trying to get my tone a certain way. I just wanted to hear that come through on the record the way I liked records. I always thought, man, I want to do all analog. In spite of the fact we record digitally, it came out well. And the other thing I remember was trying to rein the boys in.
The boys.
rein the boys in from screaming. For some reason, I was trying to not have screaming on the record, but I gave up. This is our band. They're going to scream. It's the way it's going to be. And it was all good.
Five, 4, 3, 2, 1. Curtis and I were definitely very, I want to say, adventurous in our lyrical content as the band moved forward, and Ben and Tyler were very patient with us and allowed us to express ourselves. We said some pretty awful shit on our records, to be honest with you, that I'm very proud of and would never ever take back ever, as we've become adults and have careers and we try to watch our mouth maybe a little bit, but honestly, you know, eat a dick, dude.
I feel the same way. I want to make sure everybody out there in Radio Land realize that Peter's wearing khaki pants, a navy blazer, brown Oxfords, and has a conference room at his office now.
This whole thing was just like, awesome, man. Let's just have fun. Because that's all we were doing anyways. I mean, we dropped out of college to do this band, and I did. Curtis was smart. I'm using air quotations.
For us, we were dead serious about the music, but a lot of it was just like, we were there, we were a bunch of buddies, we were playing loudly and aggressively, and we were there to, like, freak out and have fun. the songs meant a lot. We thought about them really hard. There was like thinking about the way they were composed or how they were arranged in sequence. Our good friend Derek Fonsbeck, who's been involved with like Sons of the Atom and helped out on stuff when Ether was doing shows back at the Moroccan, Derek was there, and we had long, long conversations about like what order the songs should go in, what did it mean, how did they sequence together, how do we build the energy to make the feeling of the record that happened. So it was like this thing where at one hand it was offhand, we were just shouting jibba jabba in the vocal booth and saying things like eat a dick or loving her was easy, but on the other hand, like we were dead serious and it meant a lot, and I feel like it still does to me. Like I listen to them, I'm really proud of the way the songs feel. And it was more about composing these riffs in a sequence that built and released tension in this really affective way.
Playing live in this band in this town was undescribably fun. People just got so into the music, and just thinking back to all of those shows, especially at Kilby Court.
We went from being like a band, we were all playing together and had a 7-inch and scraping together these tours, to where like all of a sudden we record a record, it was interesting, touring on it, we have attention around town, people come to our shows, people we don't know come to our shows and get excited. I remember that feeling at a certain point where like looking out into a crowd and being like, these aren't all my friends anymore. These are other people here. And then it was like, in fact, there's more other people here than just my friends. And then it was like, there's a shit ton of people that come to our shows. Oh my God, that's crazy, you know?
So I always ask myself, was it the music that we were playing, or was it the time period? I don't know. If Form of Rock had started today and had never existed back then, would it still do the same thing? Or was it partly just the time period? I don't know. We definitely had crowds that kind of I would just never would have expected back then. And then all of a sudden, we're playing to half full rooms, then three quarters full rooms, and I'm just thinking, wow, let's keep doing this. This is awesome.
It's so much fun, and like we'd be on that teeny little stage or on the floor or whatever, and I'd flip around and there'd be Peter there, and he'd look at me with this face just like, the fuck, man, this is crazy. And I'm like, I fucking know, this is awesome. And then Ben's in the back just like, I know too, I'm playing the bass very well. And like, and T-Top's just like, you look back at T-Top and he's just like screaming, like blood flying everywhere. And it was like that for a couple, 3 years.
But yeah, we haven't exactly been savvy on the marketing side of our band. I think that especially when everyone got busy and started doing other things, other bands, Form of Rocket just kind of went by the wayside, and we just focused on other things. And Curtis had mentioned Tyler Coburn, affectionately known as Froburn, a very active supporter of Salt Lake City heavy music and just the music scene period. He and I had kept touch, and he comes to town still to this day and would ask me about the records and if we ever wanted to put them out on vinyl. I said, yeah, of course we do. He's like, well, let's do it. And then I just, of course, being lazy, just never followed up. This opportunity to play Crucial Fest came along, and I thought, you know, this is probably a good time at least to release the first record on vinyl. So I called him up, said, hey man, let's do this. And he's like, absolutely. And so we just kind of scrambled to get everything together and worked with Justin Reynolds, who's the graphic artist who did all the artwork, Andy Patterson, who had to remaster the record for vinyl. And we had to monkey with the tracks a little bit.
Baptism's not going to be on the vinyl version because we couldn't fit A and B side. So Andy did a really good job of like going back in, making some adjustments. And it's a different version of Sipwood.
Everyone fucking skips the noise track anyways. I mean, that's the pretentious track. It's actually kind of cool if you listen to it with headphones.
I remember when they like they did that. Like we came in for like the last day of vocal tracks, and Tyler and Andy were already at the studio, and they were kind of just looking at us like,
we made this thing.
And we're like, hey, they had worked late the night before, and we're like, hey, how'd it go last night? And T-Top's like, ugh, got fucking crazy, man. And Andy's like, listen to this. Boom. And he like played the transition from Parallel Annoyance into Baptism into My Name is a Killing Word. And T-Top's just kind of like, yeah. And we're like, it's fucking awesome. This is great.
We only pressed 250. We're broke. A friend of ours offered to pony up the money to do it, so we were kind of at that whim. We've pressed these purely for Crucial Fest. We wanted them for those that are going to come attend the shows. Believe me, I have people asking me to hold them copies, and I'm doing my very best not to do that, just so we can have the records available at the shows. Buy your wristband to Crucial Fest 6 this year. Go to see all these bands. Come to our shows, and you will have access to the records. We're playing one show June 11th at Kilby Court with Baby Girl and Worst Friends, and then our second show at the Urban Lounge on June 17th. we hope that they don't all sell out at the Kilby show, and we'll have some at the Urban show.
That assumes somebody will come to the Kilby show.
Maybe I'm being presumptuous in saying that all these people will come to our shows. Maybe not. Maybe no one will come. And for all those people that wanted me to hold onto one of them, yeah, please. It takes a village to raise a child like us, children like us. So we're very appreciative of all of our supportive friends and family.
And along with the records, too, our good friends Hillary and Caleb Barney with Blonde Grizzly are producing, like, some press posters and a run of t-shirts that kind of all fits together. And that was kind of part of it, too, like having Tyler Coburn call up and say, hey, I want to do the records. And then talking to Caleb about, Caleb's a kid I went to high school with, and we've been close ever since. And just, like, having as many friends as possible in on it, and just, like, let's make another iteration of this thing that happened and play some shows and have some fun and see each other, and it'll be cool.
So we'll play three tracks off our first record, Se Puede Despedir a Todos. I'm going to introduce You Know What This Is, a great song written with love. It was probably the first song that we kept most of the writing, that really started the writing of the record. This song in particular, we started off almost all of our sets with, just because it just has this really unique energy that is great for opening up a show. If you listen to the record, we started it with a live track from Kilby Court playing the intro. Playing that intro at the beginning of a set at Kilby Court, I think, is what we sort of all envision when we hear that song. You can just feel the energy in the room when you start that intro. It's really cool and one of my favorite songs.
The first 4-5 songs on this record, I really like the sequencing, how they all fit together, how Coming Out of You Know What This Is, Loving Her Was Easy starts with just this like repeated note, Ben pushing all the energy forward with the bass line, then T-Top weaving in and out of the rhythm that Ben puts down. And the song's really simple. It's all built around A. And this is one of the first songs, too, where Peter and I, as guitar players, realized, you know what, if you play a basic line and I play a fifth above it, it's really neat. So let's build a whole song around that and then build a whole band around that, pretty much. Not a lot of vocals on it, except at the very end. This is one of my favorite songs to listen to because it's in that set of five. This is the proudest of all we've recorded. This is the proudest sequence of songs for me. I just think it's great. It's fun to listen to.
talking about Parallel Annoyance. That song was like similar to other songs that I used to write at that time. I just kind of sit in my room and try to find sort of an angular riff and put something together to present at practice. And it just happened to be one of those that are really kind of tightly coiled and like a spring that's ready to pop. We figured out how to make those riffs work together for the intro, and then the song releases itself and settles into a groove, and it becomes more about the guitar melody, and it goes to big open chords and settles into these chords, and there's lots of space for the guitars to kind of expand and create these sort of explosions. And that's what we did with that song. We tried to make the ending bring it full circle.
The 2016 Twilight Concert Series is here. Shows start July 21st and run every Thursday through September 1st. Tickets are $5 in advance or $10 day of show, so get your tickets early. Visit twilightconcerts.com for more information.